Old Testament reading is found in Genesis, the second chapter, verses 1 through 4. Hear these words. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all their multitude. And on the seventh day God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. May the Lord bless his word to hearts and minds today. Well, as we continue the series on first things in Genesis, we're going to look this morning at sacred rest, keeping first things first. But first, I want to start with something a little humorous. I heard about this atheist who was taking a walk in the woods, and he was admiring all creation, and he was thinking what majestic trees and what powerful rivers and what beautiful animals. And all of a sudden, as he was walking along, he heard this rustling in the trees, and he looked back and he saw this 7-foot grizzly bear charging at him. And so he took off running, and running as hard as he could, but the bear was catching up on him and running faster and faster. And he looked back, and the bear was just about ready to strike him. And at that moment, the atheist cried out, "Oh my God!" And then time stopped, and the bear froze, and even the river stopped flowing, and a bright light shined. And as the bright light shined, there was this voice that said, "You deny my existence for all these years. Teach others I don't exist, and even credit creation to a cosmic accident. Do you expect me to get you out of this predicament? Am I to count you as a believer?" The atheist looked directly into light and said, "Well, I guess it would be hypocritical of me to suddenly ask you to treat me as a believer now, but perhaps you could make the bear a believer." And "Very well," said the voice, and the light went out, and the river began to move, and sounds happened, and all of a sudden the bear dropped and put his paws together and said, "Now, Lord, for the food that I'm about to eat, I'm truly thankful." Just kidding. Well, as we're looking at creation, it has nothing to do with, very little to do with the topic, but as we were looking at Genesis and sort of walking through the first chapters of Genesis, we looked at the first cause, and we looked at how that, you know, in many ways, the first verses of Genesis match up with the order that's in creation, and how we talked about there's an intelligent design behind creation and that points to that, and we talked about that creation points towards a creator. And we also talked about last week that God is a gardener and invites us, even commissions us to do exactly that. And so this morning, I want to think about the seventh day or sacred rest. And so just to think about those themes that we've been looking at in each of those messages or each of those verses, we talked about that there's only one God. And the writer's very insistent on that, that God is all-powerful and unopposed, that God created all creation, and God pronounced that creation was good. In fact, at the end, God pronounced that creation was very good. God created people as the pinnacle of creation and to worship him. And God also invites us into stewardship of his creation as people who are to serve and to preserve that. And so we look at all those things. And this morning, we will look at the seventh day, which is that God invites us to rest. Now, there's a time for work and being stewards, and there's a time for rest. You know, I mentioned Hugh Ross, and I don't know if anyone went to see. Hugh Ross was at Purdue University this past weekend on Friday and Saturday and talked about his experience being an astrophysicist, and that was really his way into becoming a believer and then becoming a Christian. And there's some amazing things when you think about the universe. Just to recap for one second, I was thinking about this week, and even the mathematical pi, we think about all the places that pi appears in the universe. I know at first people were thinking I meant pie, you know, like we have everywhere at Emmanuel, and coconut cream pie and apple pie and my favorite chocolate amaretto pie. But anyway, in the mathematical universe, it's defined, pi is defined as the ratio of the circumference of the circle to its diameter. And it's an irrational number, which means it continues forever and it never repeats the order, which is a pretty amazing thing in and of itself. And so you think about all the combinations of digits are there in pi somehow, some way. It appears in some amazing things that are sort of outside the realm of circles. It appears in the random probability of whole numbers. It appears also when you think about DNA. The double helix molecule is calculated by using or looked at by using pi. The pupil of your eye also has pi, in as much as it's a circle. The concentric rings that travel out when a stone is thrown into the ocean or into a lake. We think about the what's known as the state of the universe, which is Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. That's probably a topic in itself. Has pi in it. which seems to have no relationship to circles whatsoever, the meandering ratio of rivers is calculated by pi. It was first discovered by Einstein. The curve of the fish is a ratio of pi. And then finally, as I heard, there's actually lots of other things, but if you take tiddlywinks and pick them up and drop them, the ratio of those that are untouched to those that are touched, or the opposite, is pi. So I have no idea. You can experiment with that later today. But you know, when you look at the universe and you think it's just not an accident. I mean, an explosion, yes, a big bang, but something that was incredibly engineered, because explosions are probably the hardest things to control in the world. And so when you look at all the work that God had done and God completed and God called it very good, then God goes and God practices what's called sacred rest or the Sabbath. And I just want to read it again. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all the work he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work he had done in creations. And those are the generations of the heavens and the earth. And even really Sabbath really means seventh, and rest is very close to that in Hebrew. And so God really sets the example from the start of working and that being blessed, but also having a moment of sacred rest or holy rest. And it becomes even more apparent in the Ten Commandments. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12, it says this: "Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord God commanded you. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male or female servant, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female slave and servants rest as well as you. Remember that you also were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." It's really an amazing key, because, you know, in so many of our lives, we get so busy with so many things, and supposedly we have off Saturday and Sunday, but you know, most of us have a to-do list for both of those days, don't we? We keep such a frenetic pace, and most of our work spills into home, and sometimes our home spills into work, and we just get in more of a hurry. And you look at God in this moment, and God really does this beautiful work of creation and then rests on it and then commands us to do the same thing. And it's amazing, first of all, that rhythm that God keeps, that God sort of invites us into his image and keeping that image and rhythm of life by inviting us to do the very same thing that God did. So God didn't just command it. God set the example of resting and having a holy moment. And of course, all the universe in many ways is holy, but by keeping a special day that is holy, we sort of allow that holiness and blessedness to spill into all the rest of our life and all the rest of the world. You know, I love this story in the New Testament as an example, I think, of my life, and I think maybe all of your lives too, at least some point, and the way in which that happens. And it doesn't happen on the Sabbath, but I think the example is there for us to look at, and that's the story of Mary and Martha. And it just invites us to sort of practice this holy rest ourselves and listening to the voice of Jesus. And the situation was this: Jesus was coming into this village, and Mary and Martha had invited Jesus to eat at their home. Now, this is the time when the laws of hospitality, the customs that surrounding that, really invited a lot of things. And so when someone would come, they didn't take the train or a car or anything like that. They walked, their feet were very dusty, and so they were supposed to be someone that was supposed to wash their feet. And of course, they were out in the hot Near Eastern sun, and you were supposed to have olive oil for them to put on to heal their skin and to sort of soothe it. There's a lot of other kinds of things. And then there was the whole thing about preparing a meal. Now, I'm not very good at that, but this is the day before McDonald's and KFC and frozen dinners and microwaves, and so there's a lot of preparation to do. And so Martha is all caught up in all that sort of thing. And she's so caught up with it that she becomes frustrated with Mary, who's sitting at the feet of Jesus, and she's listening to Jesus. She's listening to his teaching, and then Martha perhaps had some cues she was trying to give Mary. She becomes so frustrated. In the middle of that, she had enough, and she said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me alone? Tell her to help me." And Jesus lovingly answers and says this: "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." By using her name twice, there's sort of a loving, caring attitude in that. You know, this teacher to student, Martha, Martha. And I wonder how many of us could hear our own name in that. TJ, TJ, you're anxious and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. And that rhythm of life is something we're invited into. You think about, the thing about Martha is she was busy doing good things. And most of us are busy doing good things, aren't we? I mean, it's a whole list, and we sort of justify it because they're so good, all the things that we're doing. And we put more good things on the list, and we have a daily planner to keep track of the good things that we're doing, and we check them off, and we put more things on, and, you know, congratulate ourselves. And there's a time and place for all that. But God set the rhythm with resting on the seventh day and being blessed and spending it with family and with God's family and with the creator of all that is himself. And in this moment, I think this paradigm, if you will, that Jesus turns to Martha and says, you know, to put aside those things, even the good things that you're doing, and realize the first priority is to worship the Lord, to listen to his teaching, to sort of lean into the rest of God, lean into the sacredness of God. And you and I think, need to do that in so many ways. It's difficult. It really is. But the truth is, if we don't, then sometime or another, we either sort of lose our holiness in some sense, in sort of a practical way, but also our life begins to crumble, and we can sometimes suffer burnout or stress, and it really has an impact on our families. I think of Elijah in the Old Testament as an example of that too. You know, sometimes after our greatest victory, we have our biggest defeat or our biggest fall. Elijah had just finished doing battle with the queen of the land and the prophets, all of her prophets, and had this battle where they were supposed to make this sacrifice burn up, and they couldn't do it, and then Elijah called down fire from heaven, and you think, man, that is a big victory, and everyone saw that, and those prophets were killed, and Elijah had to feel good about that. And then he heard that the queen had ordered his execution, and all of a sudden he has a nervous breakdown. Now, God had handled the queen before, but all of a sudden, you know, Queen Jezebel made this order, and so he heads off into the desert. He sort of melts down, and then he collapses. And in the middle of that, God sort of picks him up and says, listen, you need to dust yourself off. God provided a little something to eat, and then God sort of whisked him off to this cave in the middle of nowhere. And after he's rested for a while, God says, listen, you need to go out and to listen for my voice. And so there's this earthquake, and God says his voice wasn't there. And then there was this rushing mighty wind, and God wasn't there. And then there was this firestorm, and God wasn't there. And then there's this still small voice, and that was God speaking to Elijah. And you know, some of us, we just can't hear that still small voice unless we take a moment from the busyness of life and lean into the sacredness that God has given us. I think we do that Sunday morning. I think we also allow that rhythm to touch the rest of our lives by maybe just taking a moment in the first part of the day or the last part of the day, whatever it is for you, and asking God to bless that and sort of listening for that still small voice of God. Henry Nouwen said this, "It is precisely when we are most alone, most unique, most ourselves, that God is closest to us." And Augustine said this, "You made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it finds its rest in you." How do we lead into the sacred moment of the Sabbath? And how do we, like Mary, sort of sit at the feet of Jesus? I think we just take time every day to ask God to bless us and take a moment in quietness and prayer and reflection, not only pray to God with our request, but also try to listen for that still small voice. Listen to this from Psalm 37. King David, who had to lead a pretty busy life too. "Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteousness shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun." And listen to this. "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him." Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. You know, in ships, big metal ocean liners or freighters, oil tankers, whatever they are, have to be scanned with x-rays from time to time to check the hulls. And the reason they do that is because of the constant beating of the waves, even in the smaller waves, over time there's a lot that happens to the metal of the hull of the ship. And so there's what can take place is called metal fatigue. And so that metal fatigues and it begins to stress. You can't see tiny fissures in there. But then if there's a big storm and big waves, all of a sudden those fissures can begin to crack and the hull itself can crack, or even the hull itself can bend in half and the ship can go down. And you and I don't have a hull like that, but I sense that there's a sense in which we have sort of mental fatigue. Sometimes we look strong, but over time, the busyness of life and sort of the battering of adversity and challenges begin to create tiny fissures. And if you and I don't take a moment and rest and allow that healing that only God can give us and sit at the feet of Jesus and worship the Lord, then you and I become victims and all of a sudden something can happen and we just sort of break down. If we rest, if we live with sort of the rhythm that God set in Genesis in creation and have that time of work, which is blessed as well, but also realize that there's a time of sacred rest when we really lean to the God and God's presence, then our lives could be very, very different. And so I challenge all of us this morning to find that sacred rest, not as a matter of guilt, but as a matter of leaning into God's blessedness in our life. Allow it to be a moment for God to bless the work that we are doing and to feel good about the work that we're doing, but also to look up to God and to open our hearts and lives to Him, just like Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus. And when we don't do that, to hear the loving voice of Jesus saying, you know, your name, just like Martha, Martha, you're anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the better thing. I want to close with this poem. And it's about mourning, but I think it could be either for the Sabbath or every day of our life. And it says this: I got up early one morning and rushed into the day. I had so much to accomplish, I didn't have time to pray. Problems were tumbling about me, and harder became each task. I wanted God's help with my duties. He told me, you didn't ask. I wanted to find joy and beauty, but the day toiled on gray and bleak. Why wasn't God helping me, I wondered. He answered, but you did not seek. I tried to come into God's presence. I tried all my keys in the lock. He gently but lovingly chided, my child, you did not knock. I got up early this morning and paused before entering the day. I had so much to accomplish. I had to take time to pray. Will you join me in prayer? Gracious God, we thank you for the rhythm of life that you've created. We thank you that you created all that is, and then that you set the example by resting in a blessed holiness. And you invited us into that same rhythm of life. Help us to find sacred rest in you, not just on Sundays, but also, Lord, during the course of the week. But help us to take that time to listen to your still small voice, to feel your holiness in all of our life, to ask you to bless our work and ask you to bless our rest as well. May we bless our families by a rich quietness that's deep in our hearts with a deep relationship with you through your power and to your glory. Amen.